interviewing Mary Ann October 1988. And as I said, one of the things that I did forget to bring was our release statement. And what we should do is talk about what that means, since I don't have the actual statement here. What we've set up is a little statement that says that you give to the Buffalo Women's Oral History Project the rights to use this tape for research purposes and for educational purposes only, that only the directors of the Buffalo Oral History Project, Buffalo Women's Oral History Project, will hear this tape at least prior to the publication of the book, and that is myself and Liz Kennedy. And that in the future, these tapes and any transcriptions that are made of them will be housed in a suitable archive. Right now, our intention is to send them to New York City to be part of the Lesbian History Archives, since there really is now a lesbian archive in Buffalo. But I'm not sure whether that will change or not. But they will be in a protected archive because it's the history of our lives. And they will not ever be open for just automatic public scrutiny, so they're protected. So you understand that. And because I've asked you to do this interview because we're finishing up our book now, I'd like you to be able to give us permission to use the information from it right away for our writing.
I'm sure it's okay.
Okay. Good. When I was here last week, I asked you to think about a few things. One of them being, knowing that there's this book being written on the history of the lesbian community in Buffalo, what do you think is the important thing for people to know about lesbian life over the years, or as far back as you know it?
Well, I know since I came out, it's changed tremendously as far as, to me anyway, as far as being rather accepted by different people. You know, like, when there were times when I got busted just walking down the street from the news, I did, we were pulled over and stopped by the police.
Particular pieces or just any three?
Well, they said that was a law that they had to. We don't know for sure if it was a law because that's what the police said. But they were going to arrest her for impersonating a man.
Mm-hmm. What year is this?
This was in 1965.
Not that long.
1965. Mm-hmm. And luckily, they didn't search her. And then she said, yes, she did. They didn't make her show anything.
What area of the city was that?
This was coming up.
and that was not the way it was.
No. We would go in a restaurant in the 60s, early 60s, and we'd have to wait. I went through that, where we'd have to ask them, you know, can we be waited on?
Do you remember
the only place you didn't have to do that was Dante's, which was Dante's Inferno restaurant.
Yeah.
And, you know, because that was predominantly gay.
I want to talk to you about Dante's because we don't have too much information on it. I certainly have my own memories of it, but I'm also curious about the kinds of restaurants that wouldn't serve you without your asking them. What kinds of places are you talking about?
Okay, there was a place, I don't know if you remember the name of it, it's called the Mayflower. It was a nice little restaurant. It was on Delaware and Chippewa, right around the corner on Delaware Avenue.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's called the Mayflower.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel? it brings up so many different kinds of questions. You didn't look queer, or did you?
No, I was very feminine. Mm-hmm. I had long blonde hair. I was very feminine. Mm-hmm.
So, you were identified as being queer or gay or a lesbian by the person you were with.
Right. If I went out alone, like if I had to go to work or anywhere that I had to go alone shopping or anything,
what did it feel like to be with somebody who was that outwardly challenging, outwardly different, all the time?
I loved it.
Did you?
It was like she was taking over. It was like she was the boss, and she was... I was always brought up that no matter if it was a man that I was with, married to, or anybody who I felt was my husband or my mate, to be like the old school, to wait on them, to do the things for them, and that they were the protector. If anything was to happen, they were the ones that was to protect. And even through my straight life experience, I never had what I did in this group. She was like, in the very beginning, a fighter for what she believed in. Being gay and being who she wanted to be. And she made me feel good about being gay. I was with someone before her, only for a short period of time. I had almost given up on gay life. She was my first one, and I was still ready to give up until I met this other girl. She was the kind that had to hide what she was. And I kept trying to tell her that I wanted her to be free to do what she wants. I didn't come into the gay life to have to hide it. And she just wouldn't do it around straight people. Very feminine when she went to work, very feminine when we were at home. Only when we went to the bars would she dress manly.
You bought her more masculine clothes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I bought her more masculine clothes. I tried to get her a better haircut, but that was a hard job. So I figured it was in a short one, so it just ruined that one. Because when I was straight, I used to hang around teachers with my boyfriend. And I could never understand what women see in another woman, or men see in another man, and I just would go there for curiosity. I just felt as though I loved this girl and I wanted her
she like that?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
want to pick up a couple of things. I do want to talk to you about some of the time that you spent in jail, what it was like there, and also about your long relationship and what a breakup is like after that length of time. But I'd like to go back just a little and kind of pick up when you were first kind of curious about gay life. And you said that that boyfriend thought it was fine about your books. And yeah, what's your opinion on why? Because I had the same thing happen to me. You know, when I was with a guy who encouraged it.
So he encouraged it, and he had made a remark at one time that he would like to see me with one of these girls that he watched.
Had you talked about that?
Yeah, we talked about it, and I was kind of afraid because her husband, he was a great man, and he loved her very much. He loved her a lot, and he stood by her for everything. And when I met him, God, he was so nice. And I asked her, you know, well, why do you want to try the gay life, try this kind of life? And how I got her to pay attention to me. There must have been this thing in her that wanted to try gay life.
Yeah.
And she never made the first approach. I was in the shower, and I was standing by the window, and I was crying. But I was actually crying because of what this man had been doing to me. And I lied to him. She would come over for her eyebrow, and ask me what was wrong. And she looked like the girls that I had seen at Danton's. So I thought she was this way. I thought she was in there for being this way. I don't know what made me think that, but she just looked this way. In the hospital, she wore these pants and shirts that looked boyish,
mm-hmm.
and t-shirts, and her hair was cut shorter. And I really thought she was gay. And I lied to her and I told her I was crying over a breakup with a woman. Why I did that, I really don't know. I think I wanted to get her reaction. And she said, well, let's go talk about it. And we sat down and we talked about it. And she said, there's men in the world out there and stuff like this. Not knowing that she never knew a thing about it. She didn't know anything about it. She was never a dancer. She never seen gay women.
Uh-huh.
And yet maybe she was curious too.
Have your children at the time?
No.
He had taken them?
He had taken the little girl. And the boy was given up for adoption because he was born. Maybe he was right to do what he did when he called the child welfare to take the boy. The boy had a boy with a hole in his heart. At that time, medicine wasn't the greatest thing now, but it was all right. He saved his life when he was born. But I had him home, and he turned blue. And I ran and got the ambulance and just made it to the hospital for them to save him again. And then they sent him home with him again. And he called child welfare from work. Told him he wasn't the father of those kids. And that the boy was ill. And he doesn't feel as though I can support him because he's going to get rid of me. And I didn't know anything about this. And he just showed up at the door.
Yeah.
And I had no place to go coming out of the hospital. Living with some lady and her husband with my daughter. They wouldn't take me in there, of course. And my mother, I would never go back and live with my mother because I was taken out of her home as just a child anyway. We never got along. She was my adopted mother. She was my mother. She adopted me. And so I had nowhere to go. So I agreed to it. Needless to say, it didn't work out so great.
Mm-hmm.
But she finally left her husband and got an apartment to him, a small apartment.
With her children?
No.
So she left the children with her husband?
She left them. I asked her to bring them. I said, why can't you bring them? I'll try to fight for my daughter. And we'll bring them. And I was able to get visiting rights to my daughter. I didn't know anything about the law.
Sure.
I didn't know anything. And he was just keeping my daughter and I was visiting her.
Mm-hmm.
Then when he found out I was with a woman, oh, it was a real no-no.
Yeah, I bet.
But I tried to lie to him and tell him that she wasn't gay. She didn't look gay anyway, you know, when people would come.
Yeah.
So he let me have, take my daughter to the house with me, to my house. And finally he found out I couldn't see her no more.
Mm-hmm. how we're doing for time on this.
Okay. Her husband found out where we were living, and he came there, and we came home. Don't ask me how he got in. He had to break it.
Mm-hmm.
But the lock wasn't broken on the door or anything. We lived in like a little apartment house. And he came to the house, and while we were out, and when we came home, he was in the closet. He was in our bedroom.
Closet. This is her husband?
Her husband. She was in the closet, because she kept telling him we were just roommates and friends.
Uh-huh.
He did not believe it. She told him she had to get away again, or she had a nervous breakdown. That's how she left. And he was hiding in the closet. And when we came home, we got undressed and we got in bed and we started making love. We burst out of that closet. I was petrified. He grabbed her. He threw me against the wall. He beat her up. I ran out of the house and called the police. And the police came. And they took him out of the house and he screamed and howling at his wife for the queer and this and that. And at that point, I was howling at him saying, no, we're not. I was trying to protect her. And the police just calmed him down and told him to go home. But that was a scary situation.
Oh, I bet.
You know, because he didn't know anything about it.
How long were you with her?
Before she got me in a lot of trouble. Let's see, I met her and I wasn't even with her a year.
You were living with her a year?
No.
And out of that came the situation that you went to jail for?
Right.
Which was officially, what were you sent to jail for?
Robbery and attempted assault. But I didn't have anything to do with any assault. I was really only driving the car.
And someone assaulted her?
The person I was with, which wasn't the girl.
Let me turn it off for a second.
Oh, I didn't know it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So you got involved in that by her.
She called the police. The girl.
But she.
First girl.
But she's. Now I have it on. Well, that's public record that she called the police.
Mm-hmm.
But the way you got involved with it was kind of her nurturing the idea of having it happen.
Mm-hmm. I only met her one time.
Yeah.
I only met her one time.
So you took the whole brunt of...
I took the whole rap.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't know at the time that she had blown me in.
Oh, I see.
And why she did this, I could not make it out in my mind. Why she would encourage it and then blow me in.
And then blow you.
She was scared. She told me she was scared.
Yeah, probably. So you went to prison, and where were you?
I was in Albany.
Uh-huh. What was it like? What was it like, not only for a woman in jail, but for a woman who, by that time, you had come to the conclusion that you liked women?
Yeah.
So...
But while I was in jail, I played the butch role.
So you did see women in jail. You did have contacts. How did it happen? How does that all start?
Well, first you're in a quarantine.
Uh-huh.
And the time I went in, I looked very feminine. And I was getting little notes under my quarantine door because you weren't allowed out of the room. From butches.
Uh-huh.
From other girls telling me, you know, like mostly Puerto Rican girls were there and black girls. That's what most of it was there.
Yeah.
And, hey, mama, you're fine. When you come out, let's talk. You know, stuff like that. I mean, it made me feel kind of good. And at first, I was thinking of doing that, being with a butchie girl.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking to myself, I have nothing. I'm the kind of person that gives.
Yeah.
And in jail, when you're in jail, we worked for 5 cents a day. The end of the month, that's what, $1.35 a month. At 5 cents a day, $1.30 a month. I had no packages coming in. I had nobody to write to. I had no visitors. so I couldn't get anything. So I decided that I was going to cut my hair. Or they decided they were going to cut my hair. See, the prisons don't like you with long hair. Yeah. They don't like you with real butchy haircut, so they cut it to here, uh-huh. to your neckline. So they cut my hair, and I decided I wanted it shorter, so I took a piece of glass and I cut the rest off.